Italy.com.
Welcome to How to Tour Italy with your host, Anthony Capozzoli. Anthony's passion for Italy is contagious. His dream is to bring Italy to life for people everywhere and to help them embrace the wonderful Italian lifestyle at home. Now, with How to Tour Italy, let's welcome travel expert, guidebook author, photographer, and radio host, Anthony Capozzoli.
Hi, this is Anthony Capozzoli with the How to Tour Italy radio show, and we have a really pretty, actually a pretty cool segment this time. I'm sitting here with my friend Jake from Australia.
G'day.
How you doing, Jake?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Good deal, man. And we'll get into a little bit about where Jake and I met and what we're doing, but right now we are sitting in wonderful Piazza Santa Croce in Florence at the Caesar Cafe or Bastisare.
Yeah.
And they make one of the best sciacquarato here in Florence. So we're enjoying one of those on a very, very hot day. And we're here to talk about Italian food. And what the title of this segment is actually called is There Is No Such Thing as Italian Food.
No such thing.
And we're going to talk a little bit about what that means and kind of some of the stereotypes, I guess, around Italian food, at least from an American perspective, an Australian perspective.
Yeah, absolutely, Australian.
And talk quite a bit about how different the food is from region to region. So, well, welcome to the show, Jake. Glad to have you, buddy.
Lovely to be here. I mean, you know, I am slightly sweating my ass off out here. It's a little bit warm, but the sciacquarato is definitely helping. It sounds beautiful.
That's great. And Jake and I met, God, it was 2 years ago now, yeah?
2 years, yep.
2 years ago, we met in Siena. We both took a class at the Dante Alighieri School in Siena, the language school, which I think is a very, very good school and a great opportunity to make friends and learn Italian. It's wonderful.
Fantastic. Perfect balance. I mean, you know, you spend all morning studying your ass off in Italian, then you spend the rest of the day living it. You know, in one of the most beautiful cities, I think, in the world.
Exactly. And this is actually a good fit because we're sitting in the kind of the outside, well, in Piazza Santa Croce, but in front of Santa Croce, there's a wonderful sculpture, the best sculpture, I think, of Dante Alighieri here. So it's kind of fitting that we met at the Dante Alighieri School in Siena. So this is kind of a perfect little coinkydink here.
Full circle.
Cool. So, yeah, that's right. But what we're talking about actually today is that there is no such thing as Italian food. And what I mean by that, and we'll talk about this a little further, is there is really no single Italian staple that you'll find with the exception of espresso, I would argue, in the whole of Italy. I think everything is quite a bit different. I'm sorry, somebody's kind of coughing in the back. Cigarette and everything else.
Welcome to Italy, mate. Yeah, welcome to Italy. Everyone's a chimney.
That's right. Anyway, so what we mean by that is that the difference between the food from region to region is the type of cuisine. So what you will find is in Tuscany, you will have Tuscan cuisine, not Italian. In Puglia, you'll have Pugliese cuisine, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it's an amazing thing because many Americans associate, and tell me if this is true in Australia, but they associate Italian food with the southern staples from Calabria, Campania or Puglia, in Sicily too, I would throw in there as well.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because I think that, you know, must to some extent reflect the migrant population you've got. You know, I think you guys had a lot of southern Italians coming through, which is why, you know, you're all obsessed with The Godfather. Like, let's be honest, you all are. But, now that you mention it, you know, I think you guys, have a bit more spice, a bit more pepper going on up there in the American Italian cuisine. Whereas in Australia, you know, I think we've probably actually had, you know, a few more northerners and a few more sort of from the Roman areas. You know, from Rome, from the sort of surrounding central regions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we definitely have a bit more of a, I think, maybe a lighter version of the Italian cuisine. You know, we've kind of got that Roman, you know, base simplicity, basic pasta dishes. The pizzas are definitely going to be, you know, the thin crust ones. So, but it's funny, like, you know, the migrants, that's what's going to define it, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's funny. And, you know, most people associate, I guess, Italian cuisine, like I said earlier, with the main staples from those four regions. With just to review again, Sicilia, Campania, Puglia, and Calabria. Excuse me. I apologize. I'm a little tired. Jake and I went out. We haven't seen each other in quite a while, so we went out last night and drank a little bit, so we're going to be a little bit slow.
We're a little bit worse for wear. But otherwise, you know, totally fine. Very excited.
Exactly. And so the things like that you'd see typically, the lasagnas, I guess the, you know, the Parmesan dishes, whether that's eggplant, veal, or chicken Parmesan.
That's right. Or basically, you know, anything done Parmesan. So it could be meat, it could be vegetables, slathered with tomato sauce, and then melted cheese.
Exactly.
For a lot of people, bang, that's Italian cuisine right there.
Right. And it's wonderful. It's great. Yeah. However, some of the differences too, let's just even talking about the Parmesan or lasagna, it is quite a bit different southern to central to northern Italy, and you will find that if you order lasagna in Tuscany, if you're expecting southern Parmesan or southern style lasagna, you will be disappointed, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, just to go back to, you know, the statement, the title of the show, you know, that there is no such thing as Italian food, I think that that's going to be a pretty jarring statement for most people. That's, you know, that's yes. That's a fairly controversial call. I think, you know, if you go up to most people and say, you know, there's actually no such thing as Italian food, they'll, you know, give you a funny look, slap you on the face and walk off. But, and, you know, I can understand that. I think that, you know, there are some things that tie it all together. There are some basic principles, some basic yes. rules of appreciation that, you know, does make for, you know, a kind of overall, I think, let's say philosophy on food. I think you can speak of an Italian philosophy on food, but the similarities end there.
That's a good point. Let's start with kind of the basic philosophy of Italian food, and we can talk about some of the distinct differences region to region. And I think we did chat about this a little bit last night over beers, and we sounded so much more intelligent with a couple of drinks in us than we do right now, I think.
We were doing very well last night.
But I think kind of the base rule for wonderful Italian cuisine is simplicity. And they don't, I think what you said last night, which I think is absolutely on, is you don't try to change or render food so much that it's unrecognizable.
You don't torture the ingredients.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Simplicity is the key. If I had to think of, you know, the first basic rule of how the Italians do food, it'll be simplicity. And, you know, also, we were talking about last night mm-hmm. being produce driven. It's about the produce. Right. It's about what's seasonal, what's fresh, and then looking at those ingredients when they're at their best. And, you know, as the chef or the cook, you're the conduit for that ingredient onto the plate, but you don't want to butcher it. You're not trying to butcher it because you realize that, you know, the best thing that you can possibly do has already been done for you. It's in the food. It's going to be in that tomato that's been picked at the perfect moment. It's going to be in the fruit. It's going to be in the vegetables, in the meat, in the fish. And, you know, for Italians, to do anything too ridiculous to that would be, you know, sacrosanct. You just can't.
Exactly. And that's true 100% of the time. In fact, you will not find, and although I do have to say, let me point out something for people visiting Italy for the first time. If you see an asterisk on the menu, that usually does not indicate that that's a highly recommended item like it would in the States. What they mean here is that it may contain a partially frozen or frozen product in
yes.
the recipe.
Yes.
So, and it's usually mentioned in very small writing at the bottom, sotto gelato, which means frozen. So just be careful. When you see a little asterisk on the menu, that it doesn't mean, again, that it's a highly recommended dish. It just says that one of the items in the dish may be frozen. And they have very strict standards what that means here. Like, they don't take that very lightly. And for the most part, when you go to howtotouritaly.com, you'll see restaurant recommendations, and those restaurant recommendations do not have any asterisks on the menu at all. And that's because Italians go to those restaurants. Italians will not go to a restaurant that they feel is even average. They go to good restaurants. That's it.
Absolutely. I mean, they don't muck around with food. I think that, you know, many people have noted this, you know, some in awe, some, you know, shocked and horrified by it, that every Italian is an expert on food.
Yes.
Because they're raised with it in a way that we aren't raised with it in Australia or America or the UK or anything like that.
Yeah.
From an early age, from 2, 3, they're being told, you know, what's in season at a given time in the year, how old this animal was when it was slaughtered, how long the meat has been aged, how to, you know, make fresh pasta. This is something that, you know, from childhood, it's bred into them, which is why, you know, you can bump into a bunch of 12, 13, 14-year-old guys and actually, you know, get into an argument about food with them. Because, you know, if you've got 10 guys and you ask them, you know, what's the best way to make a pasta sauce, you'll get 11 different answers.
Exactly. And they will usually, not only do they know, they living in the food here, it's absolutely part of the culture all day, every day, their entire yeah. life. Like, they go to market, usually the Italians go to market every day for that day's food, or at most 2 days worth of food tops. Yeah. And generally speaking, they go every single day. The refrigerators in Italy are very small. I guess the way to best describe them would be the refrigerator one you had in college. like in your dorm room or something,
the small tiny little bar fridge.
And it was just the bar fridge, exactly. Yep. And you just kind of get your daily food and you prepare what's in season. In fact, if you try to ask, I tried to ask the other day, I went to market and I asked for spinach. Well, spinach isn't in season yet.
Yeah.
And so, but they gave me a supplement. It was like, I would say this, I don't know the word in Italian, forgive me, but it's chard, essentially.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's black chard. It's natto something. And
Was it a green?
Yes, a very deep. Was it Nero Cavallo?
Cavallo Nero. Black horse or black Italian. It's actually Tuscan cabbage.
Yeah.
And now, where were you when you bought this?
Right here in Tuscany, in Florence, as a matter of fact.
Tuscan cabbage.
Yeah.
You know?
It's
not a coincidence.
Yeah. But they, so she kind of looked at me funny, laughed a little bit, and said, spinach isn't ready yet or it's not in season, but this is tried. And it was wonderful. It was delicious.
Yeah.
And it's funny. And that's the other thing, too. The other part of when you dive into the cuisine here, you find yourself eating what's ripe, what's ready, what's great, and it doesn't always look good because Italian food is not meant to market well. It's meant to be eaten well. So in the States, you will find very often that many things look great on the shelf. The lemons are always the exact same size, and they're nice and waxy polished. Here, that is not the case. They look oblong and obtuse, and they're goofy looking. But when you slice into them, it is the best lemon you've ever had in your entire life. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
So that's kind of the main difference. It's meant to be eaten. It's not meant to be marketed, the food here.
And it's meant to be natural, again. It's that thing about not torturing. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you'll see a box of lemons, and they'll be knobbly, nasty, weirdly shaped sort of things, and they look like they're covered in warts. But, you know, the flavor that will come out of there is something that, you know, most Australians, most Americans will have never even, you know, come close to. And
exactly.
It's extraordinary.
And that's the thing. Someone asked me the other day online, is it easy to find organic food here in Italy? And the answer is, for the most part, everything is organic. Meaning that they don't even go out of their way to make note of it being organic most of the time, because it's just kind of a rule of thumb that they don't use pesticides and they don't use... Now, I'm not saying that they don't ever. However, it's nothing like we're used to in the U.S.,
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, it can be easy to get, like, too romantic about it. You know, in the end, there is a mass food industry here in Italy, as there is in France and everywhere else.
Exactly.
But I think it constitutes a much smaller portion of the market. You know, in Australia and America, I think that's going to be 99% of, you know, the produce that people get. Whereas here in Italy, a hell of a lot more of it is, you know, local, regional. It'll have come in from the area very recently, you know, whereas, you know, you go to the supermarkets, you know, I know in Australia, and I imagine probably in America too, there's a good chance that whatever it is you've got will have been in cold storage for the better part of 3 or 4 months.
Exactly.
and it's ridiculous. And this is where, you know, this is where seasonality, it's not even genius. Once you understand it, you know, question as to how anyone can live any other way.
Right.
It's such that in Australia, you can have seasonal tomatoes. I mean, tomatoes, you know, it can be summer. They're in season. But the tomatoes in the supermarket were still grown 5 months earlier and have been in cold storage. Because the nature of that kind of mass industry, it's about efficiency and saving money. And now we've actually gotten ourselves into a position where it's more efficient and more cost-effective to put this stuff away in cold storage for months and grow it en masse rather than, you know, perhaps consuming a bit less of it, but doing it in a better way, a more natural way.
Exactly. Now that we kind of have the basis for, you know, it's simple food, it's shopping daily, it's simple ingredients, it's usually simple preparation. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy to cook Italian, I'm just saying that usually the processes are relatively simple. You don't have to be a master chef, although I have had food here prepared by master chefs and it's heavenly.
Oh, absolutely, I mean, you can always take it to new levels, but I think that's, you know, a really good point to push across, the simplicity thing. You know, the techniques for cooking these dishes, you know, may be extremely complex. And I think, you know, with Italian food, it can be the most bare-bones simple salad right through to, you know, a 3-Michelin-star restaurant with an incredibly complex dish. But the dish itself won't necessarily be complicated.
Exactly.
It'll still be a simple dish, even though, you know, it may take, you know, a lifetime's experience to, you know, learn the techniques to be able to cook it, but the core of it will still be simple. It'll still, you know, reflect basic flavors of, you know, certain produce.
And that's a very good point. And what you will find here, not only will you find differences regionally throughout Italy, so the, you know, Tuscany versus Campania versus the Veneto, you will find them city to city. So a city that's 3 miles away from the next city will have one or two items that are only from that particular city.
Yeah.
And I never really, it all comes from what's available, what's been grown, and what tradition has taught them to cook or eat. I just was in Soriano. Yeah. And Soriano, everybody, it's a wonderful place. I was visiting my friend Michael at Discover Soriano. It's wonderful. And I enjoyed a dish that I've only had in Soriano. And for lack of a better term, and I forget the name, and I'm going to have Michael kind of correct me, and I'll put it on Twitter or something. But it's essentially like crepe. I'm going to call it a crepe, for lack of a better term.
Yep.
And it's just rolled up and served, and it's wonderful. And I've never had it anywhere else in Italy but in Soriano. And even the locals will laugh about it, like you won't find it anywhere else. And that's the kind of wonderful thing that you will find if you go two blocks off the beaten path and go to a local restaurant, as opposed to eating what I'm going to say in piazza. Because if you eat usually in piazza near the touristy sites, the food is, I guess, mass marketed in tourist food, for lack of a better
term. Yeah, it'll be the bowl of pasta or gnocchi that you could get at, you know, your slightly dodgy Italian place in your home city, right back in Melbourne or New York or wherever you're from. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. And little things like, for example, Rome. Their cuisine is spectacular, but they have three dishes I think that they're most famous for. Cacio pepe is one of them for sure.
Yep.
Bucatini amatriciana, and that's actually not from Rome exactly, but a little town, Amatri.
Far off.
And it's just right near there, but it's kind of become a part of a Roman cuisine, Amatriciana. It's delicious. And then they're also famous for two types of artichokes, Jewish-style artichokes or Roman-style artichokes.
Yes, that's right.
So if you go to Rome and don't indulge in those four things, you're making a big mistake, and you have to know to look and try those dishes because they're delightful. I mean, you're not going to get any better example of those foods, and I think the best place to try them in Rome, in my opinion, is the Jewish ghetto.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, that's just it. I mean, you know, you will, I mean, the nature of, you know, the modern world and globalization and all that is that, you know, you can find those regional specialties elsewhere, but they won't be nearly as good.
Right.
Because, again, it comes down to what's close, what's seasonal, what's regional. And they'll tell you, and you'll come to realize that the place of origin is always going to be the best.
Indeed. And that's why they say, you know, what area makes the best limoncello? And I have to say that Positano does. And argument is usually between Positano and the Cinque Terre. And the reason I think Positano does is they have a kind of an organization here in Italy called DOP, and it's just how the same way that they organize wine under the DOC, they do it for food under DOP. And Positano has a DOP lemon, and the reason they have a DOP lemon is because their cuisine is centered around fresh lemon, and that includes limoncello. They don't have that in the Cinque Terre. So if someone asks me, my knee-jerk reaction and my tongue will tell me that Positano makes the best limoncello. Hands down, I don't think anyone else comes close.
Yeah, but you see, that's like that little argument right there, you know, because I'm sure anyone from the area around the Cinque Terre would strongly, strongly disagree.
Of course they would, yes.
But this is, you know, as we said, once you get those basic philosophies of Italian food down, as we said, that's where the similarities end. And really what it's about then is where you're from. And we were talking about this last night, that before anyone in this country is an Italian, they are a Neapolitan first.
Correct.
Or they're from Firenze.
Yep.
Or they're a Bolognese. Or they're a Romano. And then they're Italian.
Right.
And that's what's so important. This is when, you know, they all agree on the same basic principles, the same philosophies, but then they'll disagree on how those incarnate themselves.
That's right. And the Italians will go out of their way for you to, my favorite thing about coming to Italy, one of my favorite things, is when you go to a restaurant and you ask them to help you pick what you should eat. And what I mean by that is, you can look at the regular menu or you can look at what the chef recommends, like the chef specials are.
Sure.
And that usually is the freshest, best ingredients of the day.
Yep.
Usually go with something off that menu if they have the option. 9 times out of 10, it's the best that you'll get in the restaurant anyway.
If you're in a place where you feel it's you know, it's not a very large restaurant, it looks like it might be family run or has been there forever and frequented by the locals, you know, on a daily basis. For those kinds of places, I'm really just inclined to walk in and say, it's up to the kitchen.
Yeah.
I want the chef to just
cook some
cook some stuff up, whatever he thinks, whatever he likes, whatever looks good today. and let's go. Let's go on an adventure. I mean, why not?
Well put. And we talked a little bit about kind of the pairing of wine to food. And now, I'm not going to say certain wines don't go better with certain foods, because I'm not an idiot and I understand how it works. But for the most part, I think here in Italy, you will find that the wine that is grown in the region is traditionally always been paired with the food from that region. So it's always a natural fit.
Absolutely. And also importantly, that the wine and food have always gone together.
Right.
You know, because for the Italians, wine is a food. They'll tell you wine isn't a drink or something that, you know, you get a little bit toasted on a, you know, Friday night, but it's actually a foodstuff. It's part of the meal. And this is why, you know, kids as young as 10, 11, 12, from that age at the dinner table, will have, you know, a little sip of wine
right.
from their parents. And then, you know, a year later, they'll have half a glass. And they're brought up with it. And, you know, the wine and the food actually grow up together such that they become, you know, there's a symbiotic relationship.
Exactly.
That the wine is better when you have it with the food, and the food is better when you have it with the wine. I mean, Let me tell you this story, and it didn't happen in Italy. It actually happened in Melbourne, but at this little Enoteca, so a little wine bar run by two people, one of whom she used to be a chef. Now she's sort of calmed down a bit, but absolutely loves Italian food people. Not that there is such thing as Italian food. She likes Italian philosophies on food, just to be consistent here. Whoops.
Don't screw it up, chick. No, just kidding.
But anyway, we go to this wine bar, and we try a few things. And then we try this, I think it was a 10-year-old Chianti. And it was a DOCG. I for the life of me, cannot remember the name, but I do remember it was about 10 years old. It was like a 1998. And so that's a fair amount of, you know, age in the bottle for that wine. But it was sort of, you know, straight up, it was kind of pruny, concentrated, quite like bone dry, you know, and the tannins just coated your mouth, the tannins, you know, that gives you that furry kind of feeling on the inside of your cheeks. And it was kind of astringent and dry and pruny and, you know, kind of that dried raisin thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit harsh. And I mean, yeah, this was being touted as, you know, one of the best wines that they were pouring that night, a special thing that they'd just found. And, you know, when the waitress came back to get the glasses, we were talking about it, and we said, actually, you know what, that didn't just quite do it for us. And she's like, wow, really? Because that would have to be one of my favorite wines of all time. And she says, all right, wait a minute. She disappears. We're, you know, wondering what's going on. She comes back out with another glass of the wine for the two of us to try, and a little plate of prosciutto, some salami, and a couple of slices of our pecorino cheese. And she said, I think it needs the food. Try it with the food. So you have a little mouthful of prosciutto, try the wine. It's a different wine.
Right.
It is a completely different wine.
Sure.
I mean, you wouldn't... I mean, if she'd have told us that she brought us a different wine, we probably would have believed her. But it's that... And you know, it's true of the Italian wines, I think, more so than any other wine in the world, that they're made to go with food.
Oh, yeah.
And that they actually need that combination of the fats and the sugars that you get from the food in the mouth to combine with the acid and the tannins in the wine to give you... A synergy of flavor that's impossible to describe. It's just incredible.
It's true. It really is kind of a harmonious marriage. It's spectacular. And I think that, you know, we were talking about the differences in wine from kind of the far north to the south. And I'm a bigger fan of white wine. People make fun of me sometimes, but I love white wine. It's what I typically drink, and it's what I will order 99% of the time, unless I'm with someone that is, you know, longing for a red. And I'm partial to the white wines from the north.
Yep.
They're light, they're easy to drink, they're crisp, they're fresh. And we were saying that, you know, some of the bigger wines here in Italy, the Barolos, the Barbaresco, Grazie. So the Barolo...
We should probably just explain. Two more coffees have just arrived.
Yes.
Ice cold, big relief, because it's getting a bit warm, isn't it?
It is indeed. But the Barolo, the Barbaresco, the Amarone, and those are all from the Piedmont region.
Yes.
And they're delicious, but they're very heavy and they're very big red wines, but it also marries well with some of the heavier or bigger foods that you'll find in the Piedmont region. Like, they have a dish up there called bagna calda, which means hot bath, and you will typically only find it in that particular area. And what it is olive oil and butter cooked down with garlic and anchovies and salt. That's it.
Yeah.
And it sounds crazy, but it is spectacular. My uncle used to make it, my Uncle Phil. His family is from Piedmont region, and every New Year's we would make it, only for special occasions because you don't want to fall off the table of a heart attack. But it marries very, very well with the Barolos and some of the heavier reds up there, and it's spectacular. And you eat it with bread or fresh vegetables like celery or cabbage, and you dunk it in, and you enjoy it. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
But you will not find it anywhere else in Italy, but, well, I shouldn't say that. You'll probably not find it any further south than Piedmont, which is pretty far north.
That's right, yeah.
So those are the little tiny things that are wonderful. Also, up in Aosta, they have, you will find some things where they a little bit more of like an Austrian or a French bent to the cuisine, and that's because obviously they're on the border up there, it's wonderful. And you'll find fondues, believe it or not, here in Italy. You'll also find, I'm going to call it mustard, but don't think of the yellow mustards that we're used to back home.
That's
They'll
right,
have mustards up there on the Friuli Venezia region, up just north of the Veneto even. And it's great, but you'll find different kinds of mustards and things to get paired with your food like pretzels and things of that nature, and it's delicious, spectacular. But you're not going to find it in the far south. They'll look at you like you're crazy down there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's alien. And the thing is, this is exactly what we're talking about. That there will be foods in the north that will be as alien to those in the south as crepe Suzette.
Right. Indeed. One thing too, by the way, here in Florence. And in Tuscany as a whole, they have bistecca fiorentina, and it's wonderful. It's this grilled steak. They cook it always. They usually don't even ask you how you like it. They get it bloody. It's called sangue in Italian, and it's delicious. And it comes with, you don't get steak sauce or anything. You get a wedge of lemon. And the wedge of lemon over the top of your steak is spectacular.
But, I mean, so what we're talking about is the bistecca fiorentina, the Florentine steak. And you know that is regulated by, you know, certain rules for how it's prepared, what kind of meat, the cut, how long it's aged for, how thick, all of that. I mean, you know about all the rules, right? It's insane.
It is.
I mean, it's brilliant. First of all, it needs to come from the Chianina breed of cattle,
right,
which is a local Tuscan. It's a Tuscan breed, which is spread out a bit now. But, yeah, big white, and they're often beige as well. They're these great big hulking beige animals. They're beautiful to look at. And then it needs to be sort of not a calf, but a bit older, older than a calf for when it's slaughtered. And then the meat needs to be aged for at least 4 weeks, dry-aged, hung in a cold room. Then it needs to be cut from a certain area of the ribeye, the joint of ribeye, at a certain thickness. The numbers are not in my head at the moment, but I promise you they're there, and they're very specific. Certain thickness, and then no salt. No salt before cooking, which is, I mean, for most people, you know, who cook steak anywhere else in the world, you always season. But no seasoning. Done on the grill over a certain kind of charcoal, a certain height. They actually measure out the height from the charcoal to the grill, and it needs to be at that height. Then they grill it for a certain amount of time, turn it a certain amount of time until, as you said, you just get to that sort of rare, you know, nice, juicy red on the inside. Then they'll add a bit of salt and just the lemon. Now, these are the rules that must be met for it to be a bistecca fiorentina.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do any of that, then it's actually legal to say that you are serving bistecca fiorentina.
Exactly. And they take it very, very serious here. And you can find it for all different prices. But for bistecca fiorentina, you want to go to a better quality restaurant to make sure that it's, you know, you're always going to get a good cut there, and it's worth it. And I've got a couple of restaurant recommendations that I'll post on howtotouritaly.com. But you'll find all kinds of things, like up in Liguria, pesto. That's kind of the basis for pesto. Down in Campania, buffalo mozzarella, along with lots of other things. But that's usually the first thing that pops out of my mind about Campania. Down in Calabria, anything picante or spicy.
Yep.
Puglia, I'd say anything with the table olives that they're very, very famous for.
Yes. Puglia, we could talk for 2 hours just about the food of Puglia. Because
indeed,
Puglia is, it's the breadbasket of Italy. It's where tremendous proportion of the country's fruit and vegetables come from, in terms of, I mean, the basic, you know, tomatoes and that sort of thing. Pasta. I think it's something like 80% of Europe's pasta, the wheat is grown in Puglia.
Wow. Holy cow, I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Puglia is really, it's an agricultural region by history and by nature. And so to go there is a food pilgrimage. Yeah. And the olives and the olive oil and the wines that they're making down there now, they're starting to become really great as well. They, you know, they do the Primitivo, which is a red grape. I think, in fact, no, you guys have it in America, you call it Zinfandels.
Exactly, like the red Zins.
Yeah, exact same grape. Exact same grape.
Well, the, you know, the other thing too, I guess I just kind of go into my head, like some of the main staples from different regions in Sicily, Sicilia, I would say, they're known for the cuisine down there is spectacular, but it's got a lot of Arabian influence, Greek influence.
A lot of spice, a lot of those, Moroccan style spices of cinnamon,
fruits and vegetables and
absolutely.
Things like that.
Some paprika in there. It's all.
And that's the thing, too. Their sweets or their dolce down there are spectacular. And they're probably, in the United States anyway, some of the more famous desserts that you get would come from Sicily. And you would just say Italian dessert. Well, they're Sicilian desserts, actually, because it's quite a bit different here. Central to north, you get a lot of Vinsanto and Biscotti, which are relatively neutral in flavor, or just a bit of a hazelnut or something.
Yeah, like you don't have that intensity of sweetness. It's sort of, and again, this is a Tuscan thing in particular, a Sienese thing from Siena, is what are they? The biscotti con Vinsanto.
Yeah.
And that's a very traditional dessert. So it's just those almond biscotti, very simple, not sort of overboard on sweetness, dipped into a dessert wine. But it's not, you know, it's not like a port and it's not like a sauterne. It's not sticky, sweet richness. It's actually it's surprisingly dry. It's probably closer to like a sherry from Spain, a sort of medium dry sherry like an Oloroso. But for some reason, the combination just works as dessert, even though you don't have, you know, truckloads of sugar going on there.
Oh, it's great. I mean, but we could talk. In fact, I'm going to have this segment many, many times coming up, and it's always going to be called There Is No Such Thing as Italian Food, and we're going to be focused on a particular region. This is just kind of a highlight discussion about what you can expect. But we're going to talk about the differences that you will find between the wines and the different courses, the fruits and the vegetables and the dishes, and kind of the essence of the flavor that you find in each of these individual regions, which is spectacular. And please understand that I was oversimplifying things a little bit when I was talking about the highlights of regions, because Campania, outside of Buffalo Mozzarella, of course, they're famous for pizza, they're famous for red sauce, they're famous for lots of great dishes. So please understand that.
Absolutely.
And that's true of every single region here in Italy. And I do want to ask you, could you maybe share a little bit about that cooking show that we watched last night and the spirit of it? Because I thought it was spectacular. I learned quite a bit, so I don't want to take too much out of that, but if you wanted to maybe touch on that for a minute.
No, sure. I mean, he's a guy who I've become increasingly impressed by, and it's Jamie Oliver, who I'm sure, you know, most people have heard of now. He's a British chef from London, and he started off as a, you know, celebrity chef doing his thing, and I, to be honest, always thought he was a bit of a wanker. he liked to do everything fancy and, you know, very fine ingredients, very complicated dishes, and it was all too much work. Then, I don't know, something happened with him, and he decided that a big problem for a lot of people in the West, in the UK, in the world, is related to food. And I think that must have happened when he started this concept. He started the show called The 15 Foundation, or 15. And it was a TV show, it was Jamie's Kitchen, where they basically go through a selection process and pick 15 troubled youths, kids who have had a rough upbringing, who have spent time on the streets, have problems with drugs, abuse, all that sort of stuff. And to give them a leg up, they teach them how to become chefs and then work in this restaurant 15. And he's done it in a couple of other places. But I think through that experience, he sort of saw that these kids who had rough upbringings, some of them had never had home cooking. The nature of their lives is that they'd never had good, fresh food, proper food. They lived on, you know, junk food, anything that was cheap as hell. And he saw, you know, how excited and enlivened they became by getting into good food. So he went and tried to change what they were feeding kids in schools in the UK. He did another one where he tried to change the cooking habits of a whole English borough, a whole district, which was very poor. And after that, he was a bit drained. So he's like, bugger it. I need to recharge the batteries. Let's go to Italy.
Yeah.
And so he films this show where he travels around Italy and he stays with locals and he... Because, I mean, he himself, Jamie Oliver, he was trained by an Italian chef in London, Gennaro. But he still hadn't done Italy properly, so he wanted to go there. and understand Italian food. And we're watching a bit of that last night.
It was spectacular. It was one of the best cooking shows I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's less about, I mean, it's not the kind of cooking show, you know, where you just watch a guy in a kitchen for, you know, half an hour making different dishes and, you know, add salt, add pepper, blah, blah, blah. It's most of the show is him hanging out with locals, talking about food, arguing about food.
Yes.
Because, you know, that's what he says, you know, the thing, and as we were saying before, the Italians, they like nothing better to do than argue about food because they're all experts.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, he goes down to this little island that I have to openly admit I have never heard of.
Marettimo.
Yeah, Marettimo. He goes down and stays with a seafood chef on the island of Marettimo who was a fisherman turned chef.
Yes.
And he takes on the task, and God bless him for doing this, but he takes on the task of running the restaurant and feeding the locals from one of the most renowned seafood restaurants in town. And this is not a fancy place. This is not a white tablecloth joint. This is the kind of place you roll up your sleeves to go have a great meal, and it's on the cheap on top of it. You know, I mean, but it's the kind of place where God help you if the food is 1 degree off center kind of thing.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, as he was saying, I mean, this place has become sort of a pilgrimage for Italian foodies. So Italians in the know who make the trip all the way down there. And when we say make the trip all the way down there, I think he said it was 2 hours south of Sicily.
Yes.
So we're basically on the coast of North Africa now, right, but technically an Italian island. And, you know, I think maybe a population of 200. And it's this tiny place. But this guy, the fisherman turned chef, As Jamie discovers, there is no supermarket on this island. There is no, well, there isn't even a fruit and veg shop.
No.
Things come on the ferry each day, and in terms of fish and seafood, it's whatever the local fishermen bring back. So this guy, who cooks for, you know, some of Italy's biggest food lovers, basically doesn't know what he'll be cooking that night until he goes down to the dock and sees what the fishermen bring. And this is about 4 p.m., right. And he's got, you know, maybe 50 people coming at, you know, 7 p.m. And then once he's got all the ingredients and he's got all the fish, he's in the kitchen, he's got his produce, and he posted something. He stuck a note to the fridge, and Jamie said, "Oh, what's this?" And he goes, "Oh, il menu. It's like, "Oh, the menu." It's like, no, non il menu. And Jamie reads it, and it says in Italian, "Now I am cooking, may God be with me."
Yeah. Yeah.
And the rest gets worked out from there.
It's amazing. And they prepare the kind of stuff. They pick up the fish of the day and what's available, you know, vegetables and fruits, and they make unbelievably good dishes. And Jamie takes on the task of cooking for a restaurant full of local Italians who are, I would guess, used to spectacular seafood. And he takes on the task of cooking for them. And it's funny because it doesn't end in a big round of applause. I mean, they criticize some of the food. They say he overdid this, he underdid that, he didn't mix the flavors correctly because he tried to overcook the meal, I guess is what I'm getting after. And
That's right.
Wonderful. And I got to hand it to him because I have never heard of any chef laying it out there on the line like that. And for him to do that is unbelievable. He's got not that my opinion matters at all, but I mean, he's got props for me, man. I mean, that's great.
Very ballsy. And as you said, you know, he got the stuffing taken out of him a bit.
Yeah.
But for things that, you know, the kinds of things that we've been talking about now, not simple enough. You know, I think one of the entrees he did, it was a cuttlefish salad, and he had semi-dried tomatoes in there and chopped parsley and orange juice and very thinly sliced lemons. And what some of the feedback was like, okay, look, the nice ingredients, fresh flavors, but what one of the Italian gentlemen says is no amalgamation of flavors.
Right.
And others said too complicated. So it's that thing of if once you get away from the simplicity, you know, what another guy said was is you couldn't taste the simple flavors. It was all kind of a bit of a mess. It was a bit of a hodgepodge.
Yeah, and then we'll wrap on this next segment, but he goes up to Marques, which is up on, if you can imagine the boot, it's around the calf, central. So it's north of Puglia, south of Umbria.
This is Le Marche?
Yes.
I think it actually might be just north of Umbria. It's very close to Tuscany.
Okay, so it's right in the Umbria, Tuscany kind of.
Yeah.
But in the back of the leg, it's about mid-leg.
Yeah,
if
thereabouts.
But he takes on the task of going and cooking in this particular region, and he cooks for locals, and he goes out and he does the best that he can. He does a great job, I'm sure. It's an A-plus meal, but they give him the feedback that he's trying to make all Italian food the same, and it's not That's not the way to prepare.
That's right. Well, he stays with his family who live off the land, and Le Marche is a very rough and ready region. It's a lot of woodlands, and of course, again, the cuisine reflects that. They're not eating fish over there. They're eating wild boar. They're eating venison. You know, they're eating rough game meats. Because it gets cold. So what do you want when it's cold? You want roasted meat and red wine. So this is what they do.
Yeah.
And this is a family that lives off the land. I think he said they go hunting three times a week.
Yeah,
to wild provide boar food and for the family. And actually, they slaughter a lamb to feed the family for a dinner party that night. And they actually get Jamie to slaughter the lamb, which, you know, he finds a bit rough going, a bit traumatic. But as he says, if you're a chef and you cook 1,000 lambs, it's probably only right that you kill one.
Right.
Understand what that's like. But he asks if he can roast the lamb. So he does. He stuffs the legs with, I think, a mixture of breadcrumbs, fennel, a bit of pancetta, chopped pancetta, mm-hmm. and he stuffs that in there. And the nonna, who the grandmother of the family, who always oversees the kitchen, when it comes out of the oven just to check on, she looks at it. She sniffs it, and she goes, "Pear."
Yeah.
And she says he used all the wrong ingredients.
He ruined this wonderful cut of meat.
That's right.
She says.
Yeah. And, he also does a vegetable stew, a vignole, which is something from the sort of country area just outside of Rome. And it's a lovely mixture of, spinach, mint, more fennel, lots mm-hmm. of peas, broad beans, artichokes, all mixed in there, cooked off in vegetable stock, and then a lid of prosciutto.
Yes.
Just to give it, a ham hockey kind of flavor. And Jamie's like, "This will be lovely. Who couldn't love this? I mean, this is a great classic Italian dish."
It totally is.
And when the guys come over and see what he's doing, they're like, they're completely befuddled. They've never seen anything like this before. Now, this is a classic dish from maybe 150, 200 kilometers yes. away from where they are.
Never heard of it. Never seen it.
Completely alien to them. Yeah. And at the end of the meal, they've had this lamb, and they've had this vignole, and they're talking about it, and the guys are saying, "Look, it was very good, but completely foreign to us." They said, "This is not how we cook in Le Marche." Right. And that's when they said, the problem with Jamie is he sees Italian food as a whole, insieme, in tutto. But
exactly. And that's, I guess, the takeaway for this segment. We're going to end on this, and just everyone check out the howtotouritaly.com and listen to future podcasts, because I'm going to be covering all the different regions for the food, and I may be covering one region more than once, because you can't do any of the regions in Italy any justice when you cover it in just one segment. So my focus will be for the upcoming year to be talking about this in depth, but in a fun way, and takeaway recipes, things that pair well with it, the kind of wine, and my hope is to kind of bring some locals on the show and talk through, how to best prepare some of these local cuisines. But the point is, when you come here to visit Italy and you are traveling in a particular region, whether that's Lazio or Tuscany or the Veneto, and I'm naming the reasons that people are most likely to go on their first visit to Italy here, dive in a little bit and try the local cuisine. Don't go to your fallback position because you recognize something on the menu. My advice to you is to go for something that you don't recognize on the menu.
Yes.
Or ask the server, che cosa ci consiglia per primi piatti? What do you recommend for us for the first course? What do you recommend for us for antipasti, for secondi, et cetera, et cetera? The meal you have will be exponentially better than the table next to you that has ordered the staples that they recognize. Believe me when I tell you this. In fact, I will go out of my way and try to make on howtotouritaly.com put a list of my recommendations for regional cuisine, or better yet, dishes to look for and ingredients to look for, so that when you can. Part of traveling, in my opinion, is the exploration and find of these great restaurants. Now, I will put recommended restaurants on the site, of course, but part of the fun, really, and Jake, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think is finding those hidden gems, or finding where the locals go to dinner on Sunday, because many restaurants in Italy are closed, except the ones that are open on Sunday for the locals who aren't working.
Yes. I mean, there's no better feeling than arriving in a foreign city, and especially cities as beautiful and stunning as you find in Italy and Spain and France, but then getting out of the tourist areas and feeling as though you've found a gem, not just for tourists, not just for Australians, but a gem for the locals as well. The kind of place that, is a local treasure. Because think about where you come from, whether it's from Melbourne or New York or Chicago. You're proud of the places in your home city that do amazing food.
Exactly.
I know that I've got my regulars, I've got my locals back in Melbourne that I think do a fantastic job, and I'm so happy that we've got them in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
But to find those places for other people, for the Florentines or for the Sienese or for the Neapolitans, that finding that sort of thing, I mean, you're right. It's an unmatched feeling.
You can't beat it, and that's the best part. So go out of your way to find things, and remember, the best food isn't always marketed the best. So that when you see the overflowing vats of gelato with the fruit stuck in them, pass right by that gelateria, because that is going to be junk gelato as far as Italians are concerned. Go for the gelateria that has got a nondescript environment where the gelato is just sitting in a little bin below the level. It's not overflowing. Those are the best gelaterias. Like here in Florence, Gelateria Natty is the finest, in my opinion, best gelateria. In my opinion, it's the best in Italy, but this is my opinion.
Well, then you need to find this place in Bologna, Sorbetteria di Castiglione, which I promise you is the best gelati and ice cream you will have in your life.
See, this is great. This is exactly what traveling is about.
Exactly.
I'm going to be heading up there next week, so I'm going to go out. I'm going to find that gelateria and I'll report back.
Absolutely. You need and on the show that you record after that, you need to confirm what I've just put my life on the line by saying is the best ice cream in the world.
That is awesome. Well, everyone, and Jake, thank you so much, buddy, for coming down to visit us here in Florence and being a part of the show today. It really means a lot to me.
Thank you for having me. Had a great time.
I loved it. And everyone, please continue listening to howtotourealy.com, and we'll have future segments of There Is No Such Thing as Italian Food coming up. And please, I really want to try to make this kind of a collaborative effort. So please send me your opinions via email at ajc@howtotouritaly.com. Let me know what you think. Tell me what your favorite dishes are, your favorite regions, anything that I might miss as far as cuisine is concerned. And that does include every course, individual recipes, anything related to food and wine, let me know, and I'll go out of my way and maybe even have you on the show if you feel like coming on and giving us your opinion, because I'd love to have you. And with that, everyone, have a great afternoon, and I'm going to enjoy a third shakarato and be away for 3 days. Ciao.
Dreaming of renting a villa in Italy? Papavero Villa Rentals, your Italy experts, will make that dream come true. We specialize in Italy 100% of the time. It's our passion and we love what we do. We're experts on travel to Italy and we're here to help you plan the perfect trip. From the Italian Alps to the beaches of Sicily, we personally select each property to assure your comfort. We travel to Italy multiple times a year to inspect and revisit each property to assure your physical comfort as well. We thump the pillows, check the water pressure, and sleep in the beds. We know each property intimately and are happy to help you choose the one that best suits your desires. And we don't stop there. Our frequent trips to Italy enable us to arrange day tours and services, all pre-approved by us so you can book with confidence. No matter what your dream may be, a stunning villa with staff on Lake Como, a country cottage in Tuscany, a chic apartment in Rome, or anything in between, trust your dream to Papavero Villa Rentals. Call us toll-free at 1-866-737-0000. That's 1-866-737-0000. Or visit us online at papaverorentals.com.